If the whole point and crux of all boulders was to pull on to two downpulling edges and let go, I would be really, 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 like, I would be the best in the world if all you had to do was pull on and then let go. But some of the things physiologically that make me good at being able to hang on edges, like my arms being really long, also means that I'm just not that good at pulling. So I would say I face a lot of scenarios where I can like hold the holds, but I can't necessarily do what I want to do with them. I do well on holds that are small and in cut for sure, but there's just so much more to climbing.
Hey, welcome to the Test Piece Podcast. This podcast is about all things high level climbing. My name's Joshua Horsley. I've been climbing for 25 years and I love staying at the cutting edge of climbing.
Hi, my name is Timothy Kang. I'm a pro climber, a coach, and a route setter, and climbing is my life.
We started the podcast to explore and articulate what it takes to climb at a high level, what it takes to go from good to great. Okay, let's start the podcast. Allison Vest, welcome to the Test Piece Podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Allison, this is the first podcast I've done without coffee in my hand. So I'm a little worried, but I'm here. It's late in the day. It's 1 p.m.
I was going to say. Sorry to keep you up so late.
Yeah, gee, I don't know. I think I'm just a caffeine addict. So anyways, but I am really psyched to have you here. And I just wanted to give you the quick intro, the context for anyone who hasn't seen all of your amazing Instagram posts. But Allison, not only are you on Instagram, you're also a seriously accomplished climber. In the comp scene, you are a three-time Canadian national champ. And on the rock, you were the first Canadian woman to climb V13. It took you five times, but then you proved it. And you've also climbed V14. Actually, were you the first Canadian woman to also climb V14?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you done five yet though?
I don't know if I've done enough yet because the V14 I did has been downgraded a few times. So that's a classic, but I'll still take it until it's consensus. I'll take it, but I am working on doing more for the haters and for myself, obviously. Yeah.
just for the haters. No, we're here on this platform. We're saying first Canadian woman to do V14. And in addition to that, Allison, the internet told me that you have the strongest fingers in the world. Is the internet correct? Is that true?
Well, it's funny. The internet also told me that. I didn't like, there's not like a, I mean, I have considered, and I think I will at some point in my life enter some sort of grip competition. There's like a bunch of YouTuber climbers that have tried, like Magnus Mippo has tried that. It's like where you basically do the block lifts that I normally do for training, but with different grip types. So I think that would be fun. But within the climbing training realm, there's not really anything standardized. So I always myself cringe slightly when the internet tells me that I have the strongest fingers in the world. But my fingers are strong. So I can tell you that much. Yeah, that clickbait title. All caps. This podcast is coming out in all caps.
A total side note, those grip competitions, I don't know anything about them. Do they have weight classes? Like, or cause I feel like when I see these videos, like the people are like massive. Is there a weight class for that?
Yes, I believe there is, but it's not, I've done very minimal research. Yves Gravel, the Canadian, he's super strong boulderer, but he also does grip competitions. I believe he's been like world champion in that grip sport as well. But I believe the weight categories are like it's not that many of them. Like it's like you weigh, for the women, I think it's like you weigh 120 pounds or less, or it's 121 pounds and up. So like, I don't think it actually, like for me, I don't think I ever in my life will be less than 120 pounds. So I will be in that upper class if I ever decided to do it.
That's an interesting way to do weight classes, just binary, like lightweight, heavyweight.
Yeah, I might be wrong. Like, I maybe was just looking at one specific. I don't know how it worked. We should not talk about this. I have no idea.
I
looked at was like that.
Yeah, I just know the clickbait. I know the YouTube Magnus doing it. Yeah, so I know nothing, but it sounds like you might be a good contender for it. So, yeah.
I guess, is what I'm saying.
Well, we won't get too sucked down into the grip competition because I like climbing, Allison. I think you like climbing too. And grip, but I mean, fingers are super, super important. We all know that. And I thought it would be interesting to dive more into just what your experience is like climbing as someone who has really strong fingers, because if it was just about strong fingers, well, we'd be a grip competition. That's not quite what climbing works out to be. And although you climb extremely strongly, there's clearly more to it than just, you know, your fingerboard records. So I have a very, obvious question that sounds like a joke, but I'm serious. Allison, does every hold feel like a jug to you?
No, definitely not. I mean, I think it's like, I think sensationally, I guess, is the adjective I'm looking for. I think it's probably similar to most, I guess, like most skills in climbing that we now, I think, as a community have decided aren't necessarily directly correlated to success, like a front lever or like a one arm pull up or something similar. Where, I mean, I have no idea what it feels like to do a one arm pull up. I'm not even a little bit close. But like for somebody, we were just chatting before we started recording about Zach Gala, who is one of my favorite. I look up to him a lot and I think he's a really cool person, but he'll just be busting out one arms like, and they look like they're easy, but I mean, he is trying, like he's, you know, he's pulling, but it just is possible. And whereas like, I feel like it's the same for hanging. Like when I'm trying to hang on an edge, like I am trying hard for sure, but it just goes for me, and for other people, it doesn't as easily, I guess.
I guess maybe a better way for me to ask that question is, I know in my experience, I'll often go up to a boulder, start trying the boulder, and there'll be a hold, you know, like the crux hold. And I'll just think to myself, oh man, this is bad. And I don't think I can grab this. Like, I don't think I can pull through this. Like when you get, do you ever have that experience when you're on a boulder where you feel like, no, this hold's too small. I can't really bear into it. Or it, because I know there's more going on with a crux than just the hold itself. It's how you come into it. It's how you generate from it. But do you ever just feel like, wow, this thing is too small for me to exert the power that I have onto it?
I mean, I think with climbing, there's just so much more. Like, if the whole point and crux of all boulders was to pull on to two down pulling edges and let go, I would be really, 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 like, I would be the best in the world if all you had to do was pull on and then let go. But some of the things physiologically that make me good at being able to hang on edges, like my arms being really long, also means that I'm just not that good at pulling. So I would say I face a lot of scenarios where I can like hold the holds, but I can't necessarily do what I want to do with them. And it doesn't mean they like necessarily feel good. But at the same time, the amount of boulders where the crux revolves around a down pulling in cut edge, it doesn't actually happen that often. Like a lot of times things are turned sideways or the feet are in the wrong position, so your body's not right under them. So yeah, I mean, if I'm like dangling under a hold, I usually am feeling pretty good on it, but that doesn't actually happen that often where you're like in the exact same position that you are when you're hangboarding. I do well on holds that are small and in cut for sure. But there's just so much more to climbing than dangling.
Yeah, you can't just dangle your way up a boulder. I guess my experience, and one of the reasons why I'm so psyched to talk to you about all this, is that for me, if a hold feels good, I can basically always do the climb. Like it's never hard for me to get between holds. It's hard for me to generate, like I'm always thinking to myself, I have plenty of power to give to this hold, but I can't put it through this hold. And that's so frustrating.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is funny. I literally have the opposite problem. Like if my hand is on a hold, I'm holding it, but I can't get to the next hold.
Allison, if we combined our strengths,
I know, man.
What could we do?
Unstoppable. Okay,
I mean, you know, I asked that hold, or I asked that thing kind of jokingly about the holds, but actually kind of what I heard from you is that, I don't want to say they're jugs, but that it's this idea that being on the hold is not the difficult part. It's generating through them and latching them. And so that's actually a kind of a side question on there is, are there ever moves where, say, you're climbing with someone and their fingers are objectively weaker than yours on a specific hold, but maybe you can't latch it? Like you're able to, if you get pushed into the position, no problem. And maybe even you can touch it, but that whole like contact strength and that generation of power under a dynamic load, like, does that ever occur for you?
For sure. I mean, that is probably the biggest, I guess, shock when I'm climbing with people is like, just that is definitely not like the contact strength and the latching of a hold through speed is nowhere near as, I guess, freak as my finger strength is. I wouldn't say it's like really, really bad necessarily, but that paired with my struggle to like pull or do a hard dead point just because of my levers or what, for whatever reason, I actually don't, I've spent my life trying to figure that out and I don't quite know yet, but I always use Alex Johnson as a good example of that. Like, I think we both are known stylistically for climbing crimpy boulders. We both like them and we both excel at them, but she struggles to hang one arm body weight on a 20 mil edge. She a lot of times just can't do that, but she can latch almost any crimp I think I've ever seen her try. Like, she's so powerful and has really fast twitch, quick response time to stuff. So she'll hit a hold and be able to latch it super easily. And yeah, like you said, if you push me into that position, like I can hold the position, no problem. But being able to really snatch something quickly is something I definitely am weaker at.
That's interesting. Have you ever tried the swarm? That's kind of like when I think of AJ, it's, and crimping, I think of that amazing journey she went on to send the swarm, which is thin, is very thin. Have you ever tried that by any chance?
I haven't. It is high up on the list. I actually hope probably not this season. Obviously it's winding down in Bishop, but I think next fall into winter, I would like to go try that boulder for sure. I think the sideways part I will like, I always say I like moving sideways because you don't have to pull up at all. But yeah, those couple intro moves, I think that's like pretty much exactly the thing that I could see being really hard for me.
That's one of the things that makes that climb so good is that sideways. So you know, the swarm is a big move to a left hand, bad crimp, and then you jump and snatch a right hand crimp and your feet cut. I think most people's feet cut. And then you have this shoulder move as you traverse out right that is powerful and difficult. And I think it's interesting where it seems like there's two kinds of people on that climb. There's people who really do well on that initial jump move. And then there's people who do really well in that shoulder move. And they're not always the same person. Those skills rarely occur in the same body. And I think those problems are special where they have these two different gates or cruxes that you have to get through. And yeah, I can't do the second move. To me seems very hard, very hard.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited. I obviously found her real rock about that really cool and inspiring. And, so yeah, that's been high on the list, but also I tend to climb with her a lot. So she's already done that one. So I gotta make my own time to go out there.
Yeah. I think AJ spent enough time up there. I actually met AJ when she was trying that probably like 10, 12 years ago. And it was awesome back then. And it was so cool to see her get that thing done. So do you ever have climbs that people tell you like, oh, Allison, like you're going to be really good at this. And then you get to it and you're like, no, you don't understand my style. You don't really get it. And so is there any famous ones that you've gone to and people are like, oh, you're going to do Jade, no problem, Allison. And then you get there and you're like, well, I shouldn't use Jade as an example because I don't even know if you've been there.
Well, fun fact, Alex and I actually trained for months to go try Jade. And 1 week before we were supposed to leave was when the rock slide happened. So we actually went to Colorado for a month to try to go try Jade, and we couldn't. So it looks like it's actually opening back up again this season. So maybe you'll have to add it back to the list. But yeah, that one was a bummer. That was, we had a whole month and a half carved out for that sucker, and didn't quite make it in time before the mountain fell down. But
didn't see that coming, huh?
Didn't see that coming. Didn't have that on my bingo card for sure. Definitely most of Waco, I would say. I always feel like it's a weird headspace to be in when you set up to go on your first trip somewhere, and the response when you tell people is they're like, "Oh, you're gonna smash! Like, oh, you love crimps. You're gonna love it there." Like, that is basically what happened. I told people I was going to Waco, and everybody was just so excited that I was going, because it was going to be, I was going to just do everything. That did not happen. I did almost nothing that whole trip. I didn't necessarily focus on one thing, which I maybe should have. I think I shouldn't say should have. Like, if I was intending to stand on top of something that was hard, I maybe should have focused my attention more on one boulder instead of trying everything. But yeah, I found Waco really hard, just because it's so much more, it's not really that dangling style that I like. It's so much power and contact strength. And like, for sure it's crimps, but you got to really pull to get to the next crimp from the one you're currently holding.
Well, don't be so hard on yourself. I know you flashed Diaphanous Sea, which is pretty incredible. So I
did.
I think that's a quite a nice one to walk away with. I'm curious, did you look at Terramare or Tierra de Sin right next to it?
I actually did. I think I would. We didn't really know. I was there with AJ also, actually, and we didn't really know what we were doing. We just sort of ended up following where just our guide was going. We were like all over the place. Well, that was also my last day of the trip. I think I was in a good mental space to just, you know, do what I could. But I actually wish we had spent more time on North, and that I had tried Tierra de Sien for sure. Like, the day that I was there and I did Diaphanous Sea, I looked at it and it was not the vibe of the day to shred myself on that thing, but someday it would be cool to go back to just try and see.
By the way, I know that this is just totally random, but I was talking about in the last podcast, there is definitely a project right there for someone who can crimp extremely small holds. We used to call it the Invisible Man Project. It's kind of a joke, but there's something right there that just, if you go there, I'm just planting a little seed in your mind. Maybe it's the ultimate dangler. I don't know.
Maybe it's an ultimate dangler. It's hard to tell. Oh, the other one is Lethal Design in Vegas. That I was told I would flash. No problem. And I think I've tried it. To be fair, I haven't put that many sessions where I'm like super focused and psyched up for that exact boulder. Like, I've gone second day on a couple times or on the way back from something else. But I think I've tried that boulder like 6 days or something, and I still can't do it.
But it is actually surprising. But I hear what you're saying, where I hate when people tell me I'm going to do well at something or somewhere, because then I have to tell them I'm really good at falling off things. Like, I can totally fall off things, no problem. Like, I'm really good at that. And so I feel bad, Allison. You do have unbelievably strong fingers, and all I'm doing is talking about all the things you can't do. But the reason why I think it's interesting is because it's just trying to understand, like, you're so good at this thing, and how does that translate? And I guess to put the more positive spin on it, I know that your finger strength through training has grown massively in the past couple of years. It blew my mind. Well, first of all, it blew my mind to see you hanging with 100 pounds on the middle Peacemaker edge. That is really amazing. But then you didn't always do that. You hung with body weight, and maybe you're capable of a bit more when you first tried that. But let's just say you put 100 pounds on your one arm hang. And so I'm curious what that felt like for you when you know, how'd that translate to competition climbing? I don't know if you were still doing any competitions at that point, but outdoors and competitions.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, when I hung 100 pounds, I had already stepped away from comp climbing. But if 75 pounds was good enough, then I was still comp climbing then.
Okay. Yeah. What about the 0 to 75? Fine.
I mean, I would say I'm a tough one to like directly evaluate things in that sense. Like, I mean, honestly, Lethal Design is a good example of like, I think my ability to like flip the switch and be mentally in the place I need to be in order to send, like I get in my head a lot. And I think those mental tactics are something that has held me back a lot. So like on a boulder like Lethal at this point, it's probably not that it's too hard. It's that now I'm like, I'm all psyched out about it. And every time I go, I fall off one time. And then I'm like, I was supposed to flash this boulder and I can't even do it. And then I spiral into misery. And that is probably more the reason I haven't done that boulder than my finger strength. And I guess that's just a more specific example of what I felt like in comps too. Like, it's hard to know how much of a difference it really made because I was in my own way, I think, for most of my competition career. But that said, there's not a lot of in-cut anything in comps anymore. And most of the holds are more open-handed, more body position dependent, a lot more power requirement. So when it helped, it really helped. Like when I was given a hold that I was able to use, it was great. But that just, you don't have situations that are super relevant to that often anymore.
So when we talk about finger strength, we're talking typically for you hanging off of an edge. How do you feel on slopers? Like, how does it translate? When you saw that 75-pound gain, we'll just say, did you feel any gain in your open hand or sloper ability as well, or pinching for that matter?
Yeah, back when I was still competing seriously, I was living in Vancouver, and I was working with Christian Kaur, who's legendary boulderer and member of the Italian team and won a bunch of world championships. And so I was actually doing a lot of hangboard training that wasn't just on edges. Like, he had us doing a ton of work on slopers and pinches and things like that. So again, I don't really know. Like, I was doing a lot of things that weren't that also. So my sloper strength was getting better, but it was also because I was working on slopers, and the same thing with pinches. But as I've stopped doing that, because I don't do that much regimented sloper or pinch training anymore, they've definitely gotten worse. So I don't know that the Beastmaker really translates to slopers, I guess is what I'm saying. If I can, like, when I try to hang the 45 on the top of the Beastmakers, I usually am trying to like crimp the edge of the, like, that's my go-to to try to get off the ground. So
wait, that little top edge, that little bit that's like
just the lip, just like full crimp the lip.
Oh jeez. Yeah. Does it work? Can you do it like that?
Mm-hmm. You can't. I mean, yeah, it doesn't feel like that's the point, but
maybe you don't need to ever do slopers, Allison. You can just crimp sloper. I mean, that's viable, right? I mean, it's not insane.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what's nice about climbing outside is like, if I'm going to climb at my max, it probably isn't going to be a sloper boulder, and I can just, you know, enjoy doing them on some more moderates, but just acknowledge that if I want to do something that's at my max, it doesn't have to include that hold.
Well, let's go to this hangboard then that you spent a good amount of time on. And so we found out that hanging the Beastmaker middle edge maybe doesn't translate as well to slopers, but what grips or what hangboarding that you've done does seem to have the biggest carryover. So, you know, you look at a hangboard and there's small edges, there's big edges. It seems like you've focused a lot of efforts in the past on the Beastmaker middle edge, which I don't know, it's like 22, something like that, millimeters. You know, how does that translate? Or is that the best lead domino to hang if you're looking for strength across the wide range of different edges that we see in climbing in general?
I mean, for me, I think it's just the most comfortable edge, to be totally honest. Like, it just is the nicest to hang. And so I always liked adding more and more weight to that specific edge because it's actually in cut, which most other hangboards aren't in cut. Tension actually talked about those guys talked to me about a few years ago doing a video that was like a cross-sectional analysis of all the hangboards, which I actually think people would be psyched on that. But like, the Beastmaker is like
about that.
Yeah, it's like in cut. So it's just easier than hanging a 20 mil. Like it's a bigger edge and it's in cut, whereas the tension edge that's 20 is flat, or the lattice one is like awful and sloped. So I think that's why I just like feel good about myself on the Beastmaker edge, because it's in cut and better and more comfortable on my skin. And then I actually think I saw the most hangboarding gains when I stopped only hangboarding on that edge. Not because that edge is bad, but because I think one of the most important things for me was just varying the stimulus on my fingers. So I would hang on the Beastmaker for whatever felt like an appropriate cycle of 6 weeks or something, and then switch to the tension board and then do my block lifts and then try to hang a 10 mil edge for a little while and see how far I go there, and then switch back to something else and two arm hang or whatever that looks like. But yeah, I feel like some people just get sucked into one. They like one board, which I totally relate to and I understand, because I agree that the Beastmaker is really comfortable. But yeah, for me, like switching it up and trying to do something different on a semi-regular basis is what made the biggest difference for sure.
How do you decide what's next after whatever cycle you're on?
Honestly, it's not that, I guess, precise. but usually I set a goal in my brain of doing something on a certain hangboard. Usually it's like whatever to PR. So I'm going to do block lifts until I PR on both hands. And then once I do that, then I switch it up to something else. And usually it's just whatever I feel inspired by. Like I've been doing the 20 mil for a while. Okay. And then I PR'd on this. So now I'm going to go try to do something on a smaller edge for a little while. Yeah. And switch up the board and switch up the, and other times it's influenced by like what's going on outside of just that. Like for a while I had a little shoulder tweak, so hanging on one arm wasn't feeling that good. So I switched to weighted two arm hangs, and just like listened to my body in that way. So it's usually just by the vibes, I guess.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Okay, I gotta ask, what's the difference between the Beastmaker middle edge, the tension 20 mil edge, the lattice lower rung, and then you've spoken a bit just offhandedly now about block, your block hangs or block, what'd you say? Block something.
Lifts. Yeah.
Yeah. Lift. Block lifts. And I assume, I don't want to assume anything about that, but just can we break down the differences between those, what the pros and cons are maybe too?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I guess just as a little tidbit, when I pull on a block, like overhead on a four scale, like a tin deck, and when I lift weight off the ground, and then also when I hang on the Beastmaker edge and add weight, just total weight is actually relatively close. So I guess the Beastmaker is more, but it's a better hold. But yeah, the overhead pull and the block lift off the ground is somewhat similar, which is just cool. It's cool to have different ways to measure something and have them be the same. I find when people are really off with those two, it's something about the like technique or the setup of the block lifts isn't quite right. Like it's kind of a learned skill almost. But yeah, I guess the Beastmaker is the best. That middle edge Beastmaker is like the most in cut and the biggest hold. And then probably the tension 20 is in the middle. It's just sharp. I find that hold just sharp, but it's flat and the Beastmaker is in cut. And then the lattice edge, I think, is the worst. It's like kind of, they actually, fun fact, when I first was chatting with them a while back, and they told me that I could test my added weight, like two arm hang weight, on the tension 20 mil, like it was the same as the lattice edge, which I did. So they have my numbers based on that 20 mil tension edge. But I actually think that that's a little bit of a hack to the lattice system, because I think the tension 20 mils are definitely better than that lattice rung. That lattice rung is a little bit gnarly and slopey and bad, but if they say it's the same, I guess they think it's the same, but maybe they just don't know.
And the tension block is it, or the block is the tension block, and you're using the 20 mil edge there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like all those edges. I think I've only hung the last one time, and I did when I was probably in better shape, and I got better numbers off of that than I just tried the tension 20 mil one arm hang last night just to see what it was like. And yeah, it's good to hear that it's worse than the Beastmaker. It made me feel a little bit better about my numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. I got to know, mainly because I have the tension hangboard. What do you think on those micro edges? Like how do the 8 mils of those compare to, say, I guess when you start getting to those micro holds, usually you have these screw-ons. And my first question would be, yeah, how does the 8 mil tension edge correlate to some of the other companies' screw-ons? And which screw-ons do you think are the best for training on? Because I've had all sorts of different recommendations, and just, yeah, which micros do you prefer?
I mean, my favorites are the tension, the power strips, like the, they're not on the hangboard. You buy them separately. But that's my favorite 10 mil edge for sure. I don't really know why. I think it's like enough of an edge that it like holds you a little bit, but it's not quite as sharp as some of the, like the digit one or the lattice ones, but smaller than that. I really like the lattice for sure. I like the Beastmaker ones too. The Beastmaker micros are cool, but they're definitely the worst. Like those are the most humbling. Like I can one arm hang the tension 10 mil most of the time, and I can one arm hang the Beastmaker sometimes. So yeah, I guess tension is my answer.
I like, we basically just an ad for all the different companies based on the size that you're looking for. If you want jugs on the hangboard, Beastmaker, make you feel good. Okay. Micro edges. Allison, I personally struggle with edges when they get around that 8 mil or lower mark, like that 6 mil and 4 mils. I actually bought the digit ones, but I didn't put them up because they just feel like little wafers that I don't even know if they can survive me drilling them into the wall. And I don't understand how people can hold them. I just want some insights from you around like what micro edges are like, and also if you ever trained on them or if you seem to get gains on them from your hangs on larger edges.
Yeah, I do train on them. A lot of times I'll come up with my own like little challenges like I do on any other hangboard, which is mostly how I get motivated to do anything in any sort of finger training. I'm pretty competitive and pretty goal oriented. So I really like trying to see if I can do X, Y, or Z. But I mean, honestly, the micros they're very mental. Like obviously there's some component of finger strength involved. But for like 3 months, Alex and I were trying to camp it, like double campus from the 4 mils to the 6 mils. That was like our challenge. And every time I would go to hang those 4 mils and immediately like be fully warmed up, done all the hangboarding, and go to hang on the 4 mils and be like, I can't hang them today. It's not happening. Like they feel, I can't take my feet off the ground. And then slowly you just like try, get closer, closer, closer. And then I would finally be able to like start trying that challenge. But so one, I think it just, they take a while to get like warmed up to. But two, largely it's skin. Like if you have bad skin, it's not happening for sure. And then I think thirdly is just a certain maybe misplaced sense of belief that it will go eventually. Cause yeah, I mean, every time I've just like off the couch tried to hang on micros, the first couple of times I like maybe hop my feet off the ground or something, and it just feels impossible. And I mean, obviously you have to have a certain level of finger strength to be able to start trying to do that. But people who have strong fingers otherwise that struggle with micros, I think a lot of it is mental, because they hurt also. It's like knife blades. So
so you're just making fun of me. You're like, Josh, you can do it. You just need to, it's just all in your head.
Yeah, you can. You can do it. I think you can do it. You just have to try. You have to try as hard as you would on your project outdoors.
Yeah, I love this idea of hangboard challenges. I don't know if I love the idea of campusing from 4 mils to 6 mils, but I love that that even occurred to you. And I guess I'm curious, like, have you always had these challenges for hangboard? Like, how do you even come up with it? And you said you feel like it's like a better way to train in some ways, like that it's like an objective unto itself that gives you energy to train for it. Like, yeah. Can you tell me maybe some of your other wild hangboarding challenges and then how long they took you to accomplish?
The Beastmaker 100-pound, that was a goal for a long time. I don't know if I'll ever top that one. That one was crazy. I did that one in, Kyra and I were in Mexico for an event, and I did that in Guadalajara. We were in Guadalajara for this event, and I think it was like nice that it was so humid. Like, it was like a certain humidity on the Beastmaker that made it nice and sticky. So that was just cool that it was like a travel abroad trip to have a Beastmaker PR. But because we also weren't like climbing outside or anything, we were just there for this event. So it was like a hangboard vacation.
You take your hangboard challenges so seriously that you'll travel across the world to send them. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, exactly. They better invite me back to Guadalajara so I can bump that up. That was a good one. The Rubik's Cube solve on the Beastmaker, that one was on the list for a long time. And for anybody who really cares about that one, I have tried to get good enough on a 3x3 with one hand. But that, I don't know about that. Maybe. I'm still training for that one. That one's been years of projecting. That one's good. I'm currently trying to 360 campus up the transgression board. That's my current goal.
Wait, hold on. Describe that sequence really quickly.
So you start with both hands on the 6 mil, and then you go up with your right hand or up with your left hand to the 7, and then you cross under to the 8, and then unwind to the 9, and then do it again on the bigger edges.
Yeah, that's totally normal way to hangboard. Yeah, totally normal.
Yeah. I just did it the other day starting split, but I haven't taken that as a send yet. So even though I make up my own rules.
Okay. I want to go back to these micros because I suck at them and it makes me very angry because I can hang the bigger edges pretty well. Like I'd say I have quote unquote strong fingers, strong enough that when I see people who theoretically have the same or lower level of finger strength for me, just kind of hop on and do a bunch of pull-ups on 6 mils like it's nothing. But then I can't even, well, I haven't tried in a long time, but my hunch is if you put me there, I would not be able to pull off the ground. And so can we talk a little bit about finger morphology and like, I don't know, like where do you feel like you're hanging when you get on a 4 mil edge? Like, what does it feel like in your fingers? Like, where does all the strain go?
It feels like it's all skin. It really, like, I think that makes or breaks your ability to hang minimally 6 mil and lower for sure is like having hard skin where it can just like dig into the tips a little bit. And then you're mostly like, it's so much less than a full pad that you've got to be hanging on something that's not a joint, which then it just ends up being skin. I definitely have those like chisel tips that I know Nina Williams has them and Daniel Woods has them too. So I have like the like dagger points at the end, which helps for sure.
Okay. Wait. Okay. Okay. These chisel tips. Okay. Can you tell me when you palpate the front of your finger, is there like a lot of skin and flesh between the tip of your finger and your bone?
Literally, I can't make that happen. There's none.
Or you see what I mean? Like where I'm like poking this. This is like the worst podcast visual ever to try to describe, but I'm like poking the front of my finger and I have like a bunch of loose skin there. Like I have nice soft tips and there's no bone for like a good, you know, a little ways. Like, do you just have bone sticking?
No. Yeah, I do. It's right here.
All right. I don't know if I can
for the visual for the audio listeners. I'm tapping my finger, and there is a bone there.
I mean, I don't know. I'm always trying to. Clearly, morphology is part of climbing. You know, you have a plus eight, and that will, that your wingspan is a plus eight, which is amazing. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it's not great. Right. And so like exactly. This finger stuff where, you know, having a really short pinky or having, yeah, I just wonder if like how much flesh you naturally have past your bone impacts your ability to grab micros. But then I'm wondering if maybe if I just started putting a bunch of time on 6 mils, if bodies adapt, bodies are amazing. So I don't know. I want the dagger chisel tips. Okay. Good to know. That makes me feel like I have an excuse now or something. No.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly feel like if you like climbed on granite for a month and then rested for a little while and let your skin heal until it was really hard and then tried to hang, it would be like a different experience. I really think like the quality of your skin when you're trying to hang micros can like be a night and day difference. I know Kyra Condi, who, when we were living together, when she was training for the Olympics, she started using like dry spray or one of those like drying agents. And it was the first time she could ever hang the 4 mils. Was like, she's never been able to even close do it. And then once she actually had really dry skin, cause her skin is naturally really sweaty. And then once she had dry skin for once, she was able to do it no problem. So.
I'm a sweater. I love antihydral, although I don't really use it too often. And okay, I will report back later on how that works because I
can't wait.
I mean, yeah. So I'm curious, when you're doing these challenges, are you, you're taking them so seriously. Do you do antihydral? Like how do you take care of your skin? Do you use antihydral? Do you have a fan on these holds? Like, how do you know when an attempt, like when you're ready, like, you know, do you have any like, it's not just fatigue, right? Because skin is such a factor. Like how do you know if you're ready for the send?
Great question. Hilarious that we're talking about hangboarding. I brought the fan to the gym when I was trying the 4 to 6 doubles, but that is the only time I've like brought any aid to the gym for a hangboard challenge. I definitely don't have like, I know a couple people who have just perfect skin. Like Natalia Grossman has never bled through a tip ever. She one time got a paper cut on her finger and was like, look, I'm bleeding. And I was like, that does not count. And she's like, she literally just has really, really good skin. So I definitely don't have that, but I'm also not notoriously super sweaty either. I usually just like, my skin's feeling good today, I'll go for it kind of vibe. I don't use any like antihydral or anything like that to do a hangboard day prep. But maybe I should, and then maybe I'll level up even more.
Okay. Last question on the hangboarding front. I know I went deep. I'm somewhat new to hangboarding, but it just, I've always had stronger fingers because I'm a experienced climber, but just when I see people do things on the hangboard and I try to do them, and I know it doesn't translate 100%, but it just seems like a glaring weakness of mine. So it's fun to talk to someone who really has enjoyed the hangboard and spent a lot of time on it. And to be honest, I'm starting to really enjoy it too. It's its own thing. And I enjoy warming up and really trying hard. And so that's actually one of my questions is like, how, when you are doing a max hang, like what's your mental, like, where are you focusing on the hangboard? Like, are you really thinking about your fingers when you're doing a one arm hold? Are you like really engaged with your shoulders? Like, are you really retracted and pulled down with your shoulder? Are you really loose? Like, maybe on those big one arm hangs, which to me are also super difficult. Like, where's your brain and your body, and what are you focusing on?
It definitely depends on the edge size, actually, which is interesting. Like when I'm doing a really heavy Beastmaker hang, it's just like a whole different beast. Cause I honestly kind of feel like I'm doing a human flag cause the weight in my hand is so heavy that I'm like I start rotating sideways. I mean, to me, which just totally makes sense based on my morphology and my arms and the way I climb, to me, it just feels really, skeletal. Like I am strong through my shoulders. I definitely am engaged through my shoulders. Like you said, like my scapula are retracted and I'm making sure that I'm strong through my lats, but, But I do feel like when I put my hand on a hold to hang, to like one arm dead hang on it, I really sink way down. Like I'm slowly lowering all the way down into the bottom end range of my like shoulder, I guess. And yeah, so for me in particular, it feels really skeletal. But I also can almost exclusively, I should correct myself, I can basically only absolute dead hang, like no bend in the arm. Like I can't really even hold a lock off on a bar. So it depends on how you're doing those exercises, because some people like to one arm hang locked off to some degree, but I just literally can't do it. So
yeah, the 90 felt better for me personally. I did try the kind of straight down and it's okay. But yeah, I wasn't sure what to do with my shoulder. Like if I should like really engage and almost like I was going into a one arm pull up, or if I should just try to like really be relaxed into it. And that's, I mean, probably different morphologies. And that also makes me wonder, since you're so open angle with your shoulder, does it matter for you to hang kind of like to the side or straight on? Like, do you ever think about that or even care about that?
I do think about it. I don't necessarily care about it because one way or another, my fingers are on the edge and that's what's connecting me to the wall. People definitely have different opinions on it. I've started introducing like trying to hang it perfectly square and not let myself rotate at all. I know that's more similar to how like Alex Magos hangs. And probably honestly more similar to most climbing positions. But when I'm doing really heavy stuff, I for sure am like rotated all the way under it, just because for whatever reason, especially with a straight arm, that feels the most stable and the position that I can be in when where I don't rotate at all. So yeah, but for me personally, I don't really care.
I mean, it depends. Like if you're trying to get your fingers stronger, then focus on your fingers, right? It's like, why complicate things? Okay. I'm also curious if you do any wrist training or anything to support this. Like, you know, is wrist ever a factor for you when it comes to crimping, or have you seen any gains in your finger strength by doing wrist exercises?
I haven't leaned into it that much. Ironically, I actually have started just in the past few weeks doing it, just like wrist curls and things like that. But it's because I have potentially this like slightly reoccurring thumb tendonitis that I got from crocheting too much in September. So that's coming back a little bit actually right now. So I'm trying to try some new things, one of which being wrist training, to try to get that to be less angry at me. So
okay, crocheting not good beta for getting stronger. Good to know. Okay,
not recommended.
Okay, I still have one more question. When you're doing limit sessions on the fingerboard, how do you know when you're fully rested to try again? Because I have this thing where I don't know, like I'm not tired. Like when I'm like, okay, like couldn't hang on this 8 mil edge anymore. Like I don't know, like I just kind of start getting tired and shake and fall off or step off. But then after 30 seconds, I kind of feel normal again. But then if I try again, I clearly don't have, I'm not ready yet. And so just how long do you rest if you're really trying to show your best on the fingerboard?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of treat it like any other max effort exercise. Like I think if you were to think about yourself doing like a one rep max deadlift, like you wouldn't do a one rep max deadlift, drop the weight, step back for 20 seconds and then immediately try it again. Like that probably is not going to be very productive for you. And so hangboarding is a little different. And I mean, honestly, I think it's easier to gauge that when I'm trying to like add a ton of weight onto an edge. Like it feels more similar to something like that, something like a deadlift. But so yeah, I mean, I'll rest like 5. Sometimes if I'm really psyched and really trying to do something that is hard, especially with skin, like I'll rest even longer, like 10 to 15 minutes to try to get my skin to cool all the way down and to be fully rested and ready to go again. But I when you're hanging for like 3 to 5 seconds, like that's pretty max level exertion. So resting for 30 seconds, for sure isn't enough. And so, yeah, I sort of mentally treat it like a max of anything, whether it's weightlifting or bouldering or whatever it might be.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess my confusion for myself is just if I do a limit boulder problem, I come down and I'm tired. Like I'm huffing and puffing. My arms are tired. My back is tired. But when I step off of a 6 second hang, I just kind of like, okay, like I don't know, you know, I don't feel there's not a lot of visceral, like, oh my God. Like, I mean, maybe my fingers are kind of tired and my skin hurts a little bit, but I don't feel exhausted. And so sometimes I'll rest 5 minutes and I'll get back on and I'll have a really bad second set. And I'll think like, man, I thought that would be enough, but clearly it's not. So maybe my skin didn't cool off enough.
I mean, I have always said that I think trying hard on the hangboard is something that's really difficult and actually learned. And that I've just learned from spending so much time training it. Like, I mean, I treat hangboarding kind of like grip sport. Like it's something different than climbing. It obviously helps me climb better, but I also just like it. And I like doing these challenges and I like that it's a metric for me to see progression that is unique in climbing. Like not every V10 is created equal. So it's hard to feel progression in a sport that is evaluated by something that's completely subjective. So what I really like about hangboarding is like, I could not hang on this edge and now I can, or I could add 20 pounds before and now I can add 40 pounds. So I think that's what always motivates me to keep coming back to it, is that it's something that is objective and measurable. Just because, yeah, like I said, I've struggled with confidence before, and it's hard in a sport where things are, especially in comp climbing, where every boulder is different every time you go to a new event and all grades are subjective. So it's like hard to see progression in that way. So I think just mentally for me too, hangboarding has been great because I can see my own progression and my own trajectory. But that also has been in like learning to try hard on the hangboard. Like if I'm, it actually goes back to your very first question about like, oh, can you just hang on any hold and it feels easy? Like when I'm hanging on a 10 mil, I should maybe post a video from the other, from not from my back one time, but like I am like full eyes closed, like trying as hard as I possibly can for the whole time, right until the last second when I come off. So I also think that that is something that's learned, how to try really hard when you're not going anywhere. Like you're literally just hovering in one position. So it's sort of a weird sensation to learn what parts of your body you're trying hard in. But yeah, I think that has been something that has been learned for me as well.
Yeah, I know it's pretty tough to even talk about it since it's such a static basic movement. That was kind of one of my, where my question went or was trying to go, where it's like, what are you focusing on? And it's like when I go and cause I try to take it seriously too. You know, if you're gonna hangboard, if you're going to show up for an exercise, like show up, you know, your intensity and your intention, I think matters more than almost anything. So yeah, I don't know if there's anything more you can say on just what your mental state is, what your, you know, how you prep for it, and then what you're really focusing on when you're doing that limit hang where you're not even moving, you know, like, and again, I know it's kind of a tricky question. So if you want to punt on it, I don't blame you.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely hard to, hard to verbalize, I guess. I mean, definitely a lot of it is in the fingers, like curling my fingers towards my forearm. And then a lot of it I feel in my back, like my lats, my rotator cuffs, all of that feels really, really engaged, which it has to be because I've got to be engaged somewhere because I'm not in my arm. So I think a lot of it comes from my rotator cuff. Yeah. Also, PSA to the people that consume climbing media, but I did this video with Hannah Morris, she's pretty big on YouTube. She's from the UK. She came to Salt Lake and did a bunch of videos with people. And I talked about, which I had never talked about before, because I don't know why, but my hand goes sideways on most edges, like flat edges. Can't tell if you can, but I like curl it like this, sideways. And I think I just started doing that as a kid, like growing up in climbing, to try to get, like I get more surface area of my fingers on a small edge by turning my hand sideways. And I guess the reason it's a PSA is I intended it to be a fun fact. And then I got a bunch of messages from people being like, oh, I also have long fingers and like my fingers have been injured. And so I should really try this as like a, injury prevention technique, or like, oh, this is a great tactic to use. And so I just wanted to PSA clarify to the people. I did not mean for everybody to try that. And I actually think that if you hadn't grown up doing that, that's probably a super risky thing to start trying, to be like torquing your whole hand sideways. So yeah, I guess just to retract that statement from anybody who's consuming hangboarding media on a regular basis, I did not intend for a sideways handhold to be an injury prevention tactic.
Good PSA. Great video with Hannah. That was a wonderful video that, yeah, just I wished it was twice as long. I wished we had ultrasound of your fingers to see where your attachment, you know, you kind of hinted at morphology in there. And that's where some of my questions came from. And that side, yeah, I think people should be careful. I would think, yeah, being a little twisted to the side. I mean, I will say that's external rotation, which actually usually does make you stronger. But I noticed after watching it that when I look at the indentations that the crimps leave on my fingers when I'm done doing a set, that on my right side, which is my stronger side, it's a little slanted. Like I think I'm doing it a little bit as well. And on my left side, it's straight on. And I'm like, is that the issue? Is that what's going on there? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I just would like to clarify. I don't not only be careful, but like, don't do it on purpose. I think if you're not like I think everybody's morphology of their hand is just different. And so people grab holds different way. Like, I mean, but I just, yeah, a lot of people watched that video and I was like, I do not want to be encouraging side torque on people's joints randomly. So just throwing that out there.
Do not get hurt.
Do not attempt.
On the hangboard. There's no reason to get hurt on the hangboard. There's no big surprises. Like no one, like there's the hold does not spin. You do not fall and break an ankle randomly. Like you should be, it should be safe. And I'm curious, do you think hangboarding actually, yeah. How's your finger injury history? Like, has it helped prevent injuries, do you think?
I definitely think so. I mean, that's one of the big reasons I do it and use it so much. I've had some for sure. But the majority of them have been like weird ones. Like I tore the cartilage in a joint once. But yeah, that's just like an example of like super random things. But that's like top of the list of the reason other than the fact that I like it and I think it's fun. That's probably the second reason I hangboard, is because I think having strong fingers is the best way to reduce your chances of injury. But yeah, I mean, people aren't immune, but so I think the more you can do to prevent that, the better off you're going to be for sure.
Any tricks for people to make it more fun? I think at first, when I started hangboarding, I thought it was miserable. Just being honest, I felt like it was very isolating, very lonely, and focused on something. I always liked movement, not so much staying still. And I'm just wondering if whenever you have lulls in your psych, just if there's any, you know, tips or tricks you have for people to make it fun, because I do think that fun it is really an important underpinning to progression, anything.
Yeah. I mean, most of the time I think it's fun, but I think it's fun to do things you're good at, and I'm not gonna like, it's something I'm good at. So I always, whenever I need a confidence boost, that's what I do. But, at the same time, it's always cool to be trying something else. You know, I've been doing block lifts for a long time now, and just all of a sudden that seems to be like really popular. Like a lot of people are starting to do it now, which has also been exciting to me, because I'll go into the gym and try block lifts and there's always somebody there like has a question, wants to know about this, or like wants to try it or whatever that may be. So I've had a bunch of times where I've like felt a motivation lull, and then I've had friends who've come into the gym and been like, oh, I've always wanted to try this block lifting thing. And so then I am able to do that with other people and get other people psyched. And that's also a reason why I think I change what I'm trying to do so often, is because more often than not, if somebody sees you doing that, they'll also want to try it. And that's just another, you know, that's like having a bouldering session with your friends. Like it's the same concept, except you're hangboarding. So that I found that to be really helpful.
If I walked into the gym and I saw you doing block lifts, I would want to try. There's just something about being a climber, like, oh, Like she's picking that up with just her fingers. I wonder if I can do that too. It's very, I don't know. Maybe I'm really competitive. It's probably what it really is.
But yeah, I mean, that is a classic that has happened a lot for sure.
If you see someone that has a block lift that's not equal to their pull down and their Beastmaker, you said something about it maybe being their setup is wrong, but I'm curious. My head instantly went to maybe their shoulders are a weak link, where you seem to really be good on that one arm hang, like your shoulders really support it. Have you ever seen that? I just wonder if it's like, you know, a hint for someone where they might test their block lift, test their Beastmaker, a one arm hang, and then see a vast difference. And maybe it's like a hint where they need to focus.
Yeah. It's more like when I mean setup, it's more like the height of your feet or the length of the cord attached to the block. I found when I've had people message me and just ask, you know, I can only do half my body weight on a block lift. And then when I ask if they can hang a one arm edge, they say yes, which that makes no sense. So a lot of times it's like the loading pin is too tall versus the rope. So then you're like trying to one arm row half your body weight, which is actually really hard. So yeah, I mean, a lot of times I'm trying to lift with my, I mean, probably back and legs to get the weight off the ground. But that, if people are like struggling to figure out how to pull the most amount of weight, definitely adjusting either the height of your feet off the ground or the length of the attachment point from the block to the loading pin is definitely like, that's the best way to see an improvement there and to like actually get to your max. Because if my feet are on the ground and my feet aren't higher than the loading pin, I can lift way less than my max versus if I'm like actually at a height where I feel like I can use my big muscles instead of like trying to one arm row 200 pounds with my bicep, which is just not going to happen.
Physics. Yeah. Have you tried doing like single finger lifts? Have you ever tried to find which finger is weakest? I just remember hearing some stuff from Aiden Roberts. I found that really interesting. It's kind of like obvious now that I heard it, where perhaps you have one finger that is, you know, could see rapid improvement due to whatever misloading, but uneven loading that flat edge gives it. Do you have any experience with that?
Yeah, I was probably at least a full 6 week cycle of doing one finger lifts for sure before I went to Rocklands last year. And then a little bit when I came back, partially I was struggling with a lumbrical issue. And so I was sort of trying to track and see how much I could weight that my like ring, I think it was my ring finger that was hard to load at the time. But yeah, I did like a full, I've done a couple full cycles with a little tension prototype that they have. That's like has a mono and a two finger pocket spot, but it's also really not, it's like really small. So it's easy to take places. And yeah, I really actually liked playing around with that tool. I don't know that I found out anything necessarily super surprising, except just how much having a lumbrical issue was affecting my ring finger. Like I could put like 5 pounds, like just the loading pin alone on my ring finger at first when it was still hurting, which was like, I mean, that's pretty shocking. Like I was still able to climb with 4 fingers, but it was just this classic lumbrical scenario that when you drop your pinky, then you get that, if anybody's had a lumbrical issue, you get that like sharp shooting pain down your hand. But if I climbed with 4 fingers, it was totally fine. But just to like load that finger by itself and see that I could only put 5 pounds on that one finger was just a little bit, that was actually pretty shocking. That's all that it could take at the time. So
here's my PSA on lumbrical is I guess I kind of did my FDP, the classic one where it's open hand or like 3-finger drag and you feel it go all the way to your elbow. But I definitely did something in my hand as well, which I assume was lumbrical. So I hurt myself. And then my rehab was mainly just drinking beer and not climbing. And then for years, I basically always had to have a 4th finger on, or I even did a climb. I did Midnight Lightning, which you jump to the lightning bolt with 3 fingers. And I did it with 2 fingers because it felt like I was going to re-injure myself. But that was like 4 years after the injury. And so just for anyone listening, if you have a finger injury or something like that, that only shows up when you do something like a one finger lift, go train it, because otherwise you will just avoid that, you know, that, you know, maybe through natural things, you'll go from 5 pounds to 10 pounds. But I think it's really smart that you, you know, found the issue and then loaded it appropriately, even though that load was minuscule, really.
Yeah. And I mean, I just was able to watch it slowly get more and more. I mean, I also just gave it time too, but now I'm at the point where I can, it's still like scary almost to load it, but my latest, I just did the pocket campus board. I think I posted that. I did like campus with two fingers up the campus board, but that was exciting because that was like my first, I used to do like pocket style challenges all the time, but I've been almost over a year since I did that I haven't felt like I can do anything like that. So finally, just recently, I was able to do something with two fingers and not be like sore for a week afterwards.
I hope you got a sweet picture to juxtapose with Wolfgang Gulick and like the, cause he was campusing like that. Like that would be a cool picture. I hope you did something. I didn't see your post. I'm sorry, but that sounds really cool. Good. Congrats on that.
Yeah, that would be a cool comparison. But that was actually Ben Hanna did it first in the Pusher Training Center. So that's another. I mean, that's another way I'm inspired on the hangboard is when other people post something. I mean, I actually think the best hangboarder in the world is this guy. His Instagram name is Monskogram.
Yes, yes.
He's from Japan. His Instagram bio is office worker, but he does things that like. I mean, I think you would think are actually impossible. And then he'll just post this video of him, you know, I can't think off the top of my head, so I'm just going to make it up. But like a 45-second hang on the 2 mil edge or something, which that's, I don't know if that's true or not, but it is things like that. So if you haven't seen his Instagram, it's outrageous and definitely worth a visit.
He probably is an office worker, by the way. I just can't imagine.
I mean, he's for sure. Yeah.
So he has a fan set up on his hangboard. And yeah, the one you're thinking of is doing a 30-second front lever on 2.5 mil edge.
That's the one. That's the exact one. See, it was even harder than I thought.
I just want to just let that hang there. It's 2.5 millimeters. For 30 seconds. And I don't care if it's honestly a front lever. I don't think that matter personally. You know, it's like, well, actually, good job. 30-second front lever is really good. Actually, I take it back. That is impressive.
I can do a 0-second one.
Yeah. But as far as like finger strength, I don't think that they're all that different. But 2.5 mil. Yeah. I feel like he's in retirement or something. I haven't seen him post in a while. And he even did a 1.5 millimeter pull up. And like I said, I can't quite fathom 4 mils. And so that just seems, I really don't get it. I'd love to see him, I don't know, do more of it. I love that he went deep. That's a classic, just, that is a Instagram of a guy going as far as you can on small edges. And he, yeah, good job.
Yeah, Tension tried to send me their 7 and 9 millimeter power strips. Like they're 7 millimeters on one side and 9 millimeters on the other. And so there's this little lip that's a difference of about 2 mil, but it's a little slopey. And Carrie Scott, who works at Tension, sent me them and said, we thought if anybody could hang these, it would be you. And I think I just replied, like, it's not happening. There's no way I can do that. But send them to Japan to this guy, Monskogram. And I sent her his Instagram. And then he, whatever, 2 months later, he posted about it. And he did it. Yeah. Oh, God. I'll take the referral credit on that one, but there's no way I will ever be able to do that.
So Allison, you also do tons of climbing outdoors. You've done tons of comp climbing and you love the hangboard and it's really paid off in your climbing. But I'm curious, like, do you ever feel like you get sucked too much into training? Like I definitely have seen people, I think it's a, I was going to say it's from, it's a, it's this era kind of thing where I see people get too into training and they kind of lose climbing. And I don't think that there's nothing wrong with that. Like there's nothing wrong with that guy in Japan. I mean, if that's what he wants to do, more power to him. And I will subscribe and click the like button a million times. But if you are a climber, sometimes you get sucked into these things that you're good at that don't necessarily help you in climbing? And how do you, so how do you find that balance? You know, how do you know when it's time to, you know, deal with a footwork issue versus go to a, from 75 pounds to 100 pounds on the Beastmaker Edge?
I mean, a lot of it is, I feel like, based on whatever I'm working on at the time. Like I tend to be pretty singularly focused on one boulder, whether that is a good tactic or not. I find it hard to like focus on multiple things at once. And so it sort of is all based on whatever I'm working on at the time and whatever I think needs to change in order for me to find success on the boulder I'm trying. Because I feel like currently, since I'm focused on climbing outside, there's always a boulder that I'm trying, even if, you know, if I like haven't posted that I'm like sending stuff all the time, it's probably because I'm like banging my head against the wall trying this one boulder over and over and over again. And when I'm in that phase, like I don't really end up training that much. Like I like to do a session at least once or twice a week. Probably it mostly is to feel productive and feel like I'm reminding myself that I'm still strong. Because I think because I was so into training and just climbing inside for, I mean, until I was like 25, from that age of 10, I feel like I have this anxiety about it, that if I'm not training, then I'm getting weaker, even though I'm climbing outside and climbing at my limit. And like, even I'm sore the next day after I'm trying a boulder. So I think part of it's mental. But part of that also is true. Like you try one boulder over and over again for 3 or 4 months, you probably are getting weaker at the other things that climbing requires, because one boulder can only ask so much of you. And yeah, I mean, I think I'm still earlier in the process of figuring out how to project the best way that works for me. Because that is something that is tough, to like figure out how much to dedicate to one thing versus how much to train and make sure you're not getting weaker. And yeah, how much time is too much time to invest into something. But yeah, I feel like I'm always training to some extent. But yeah, I'm getting better as I get older at letting that go and acknowledging that if I'm getting better at the boulder that I'm trying, then probably I'm doing all right. So
how do you pick the boulders that you want to project?
I think a movement is something that's really always interested me. Yeah, it's a hard question. One, I like boulders that require some sort of finger strength component, because that's what I'm good at. And I think I'm still learning like what suits me well, just because for so long I've let other people, like, for example, you'll love Waco and you'll just do everything so fast there. And so I've spent a long time just letting other people, whether it's a coach or a friend or whatever, dictate what they think I'm going to be good at. And so I think I'm still sort of trying to figure out what my style is and what suits me well. And yeah, I've been trying to like branch out more and try things that have a different style or a different movement that I haven't invested that much time in. Because like, I think it's going to be hard for me, just because of my morphology and what I'm good at and what I'm weak at, to ever be the kind of person that like floats through one arm pull up moves like Zach Gala does, as we talked about at the beginning. So I think in order for me to like level up, I'm going to have to learn to be somebody who's competent at knee bars or heel toe cams or like something that's a little techier. So I've sort of been exploring more funky boulders that have a different and wider range of movement styles and things to be learned in that manner, rather than things that are just like pure pulling power strength focused, because I think I want to get better at that, but I think the roof is far lower than some of the more technical things that I could try.
It's interesting that you went and had such a great trip in Rocklands, which if I were to take a guess as to what, you know, where your finger strength might excel at, you know, I think of Rocklands as being big and powerful. And I think the holds being pretty darn good. And you had a great trip there. And I remember also some of the climbs you did in Joe's were just, I mean, masterpiece. I don't know. Like, yeah, what do you excel at? Like, what areas have you excelled at and really enjoyed that maybe you didn't expect you would?
Yeah, I mean, I think Rocklands is interesting. I did have a fairly good trip there, but I also did not do well on the things that I had initially thought I would. I sort of found, like, one of the 8Bs I did while I was there is just like a sideways crimp crack climb. So, like, basically, I mean, that is, if you're going to build something that was like perfect for me, I think it would be a tiny seam that goes sideways that you don't have to finger lock in, because I don't know how to do that. So, like, that was sort of perfect. And then Master Key was the other boulder I did. And I did that with like a super, super gnarly, gross match on like a tiny little slot. So, I mean, I think a lot of times it's like stuff that's like kind of gross is what suits me well. And things that go sideways, like Masterpiece is another one that the meat of that boulder is like sideways campusing without feet. So there's not really much upward pulling in terms of that. And you can just sort of dangle through it. So yeah, I think things where I can like be in control for most of the time. So I can like, for example, on Master Key, I just had to stay in the same place and finagle my way into like a piano match position and then be able to jump out of it. I do a lot better than when you have to like latch a hold and however you catch that hold is what you're working with. But yeah, definitely. I mean, I definitely am limited by my pulling power a lot of the time, for sure.
What were some of the climbs in Rocklands that you had your eyes on that then turned out to not suit you like you were hoping?
I'm trying to think. Ray of Light is a big one that I thought I was going to really like. And that just like the holds are not in cut and the finger lock like really hurts and it's far, like the booms are giant. So I mean, maybe I should have just tried it for longer, but I think I tried it one day and then was like, that's not, you know what? That's not worth my time. Like, I don't think I really did many of the moves on that. Quintessential I tried, which I think I can definitely do that one, but it was a lot more challenging for me than I had anticipated. I'm trying to think of, I had a relatively large list. I got pretty close on Amandala. I was like, I probably needed one or two more sessions, but by the time I was done, or by the time the trip was over, I was like kind of burnt out and done being there and feeling kind of demoralized. So I thought about extending, like I literally probably needed one more session feeling good to link the whole thing together. But yeah, so then we ended up just leaving that one for next time.
It's funny how my head totally went to those same climbs. I thought you might pull on Oliphant's Dawn. That's kind of a classic, thin looking test piece.
Yeah. I was really, really wanted to do Amandala like that. I mean, I just,
beautiful climb.
I have never been so like inspired by a boulder in person as I have that boulder. Like it's so much more proud and amazing than it looks even in photos. Like, I feel like usually you get these like weird, tricky photos that make something look so unbelievably amazing. And then you get to it in person and you're like, oh, like a new baseline is kind of like that. When I first saw that in Magicwood, like it's like a tiered landing. So it looks like if you take a photo from below, it looks like it's pretty epic and it ends up that it's sort of short and kind of dumpy. But for me, Amandala was like the opposite. Like I kind of thought it was going to be small. And then once we hiked around the corner and we're standing underneath it, like it is just, it's got everything on it. So yeah, I mean, that's a good example of, I mean, doing that one would be something that would really push me because the top out's like pretty scary and I don't do that well with scary. So that took me a while to get the courage up to do that, to piece together the bottom and then to just be climbing on a boulder that was put up so long ago and still sort of stands the test of time as one of the best in the area. Yeah, that one, I mean, the plan is to go back this summer for sure for that one. And that's at the top of the list, definitely.
Oh, it's so, so beautiful. And I know what you're saying. I hate when I literally travel around the world and I get to a boulder, I think, that's it? This thing?
You're like, oh.
I got to tell you, Ray of Light, I mean, cool climb. Actually, I thought that I broke my finger on Ray of Light for a moment. I kind of got stuck in that finger jam.
I totally could see that happening. For sure. That I was so scared of that move. partially that was why I bailed on that.
That was scary, right? Like, I really think you could actually hurt yourself. Side note, I saw Nina Williams do that in person for her first V13, and she was so psyched, and it was really cool. So just, you know,
well,
cool
we're going back together this summer. That's my Rocklands buddy this summer, so that'll be exciting.
Well, maybe you will both do a Mandala.
That would be sick. I also really want to do, I never tried it because it actually, another one that is way bigger than I ever thought. I really wanted to try El Corazon because it's sideways, and I think I have a pretty good span. So I think there's a chance that might suit me well, but we got there and I looked at it, and it's like, that one also is kind of crazy hot. It's like tall and like into a pit, and it does not look like that from some of the videos, unless you're like really paying attention to where the spotter is standing. It doesn't look so bad.
I do know someone who seriously hurt themselves there, so be careful.
Same. But worth a dabble.
Yeah. I wonder if you can do it the way Daniel was trying it in the video. Remember when he was cutting and basically catching it with one
campusing
hand?
Yeah.
I don't know. Just putting it out there.
There was a Japanese guy there last summer who was trying to double clutch at it, like full jump, both hands off, straight up the opposite wall. He was honestly shockingly close, but that maybe that'll go down this year.
You got to find your own way.
Yeah.
thanks for taking us to Rocklands, and I wouldn't sell yourself short. Those sends that you did were incredible. I guess if that was my trip, and I think most people listening, if that had been their trip, they'd be pretty excited. And knowing that Amandala is just within, you know, another couple of days, that there's nothing that would make me want to book my trip more than knowing that. So outdoor climbing is something you've switched to, it sounds like, within the last, you know, 3 years, it sounds like. And the joy that you get in outdoor climbing is a specific type. But before that, you won nationals multiple times. You've competed on the biggest stages. What was the joy you got in competition climbing versus outdoor climbing? They're so different. Like, how did that switch go, and why did you stop competing?
Like I said, my mental, I guess, fortitude, I would say, has always been my weakness, both indoors and outdoors. And competition just highlights that more than anything. Like, you don't get to pick the day that you're competing, or the time, or how you're feeling, or like how you're feeling about yourself, or what the environment is. And all of a sudden you're put in a tiny isolation zone with the best of whatever the scale is, the best in a country, the best in the world, the best in the region. And so in a sport where we're always told to like not compare yourself to other people, and that is a downfall, you're all of a sudden in like a tiny square with one warm-up wall with everybody you could possibly think of that is on the same plane as you to compare yourself to. And so if you're not mentally strong, it's really easy to start doing that and to start feeling like you don't belong and you're not good enough to be there. So that was always a struggle for me, is like feeling like I didn't belong, because I started doing World Cups when I didn't belong. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, sell myself short, but I hadn't really been training very much. I was just out of college, and I was still climbing and training all through college, but I did a 1 year of college, and then I was having a really hard time and didn't really want to be there. And so I took a year off and went sport climbing in Southeast Asia. And then I came back from that trip, which, I mean, you're like kind of climbing, but you're not really, it's more like vacation mode. And I came back from that trip, and right after I came back from that trip, I went to nationals, and I did well enough to make the national, like I made finals or something. And I did well enough to make the national team. And then subsequently go to a World Cup. And it was not like the level in Canada just isn't that high, or definitely wasn't at the time. And so the difference between barely making the national team and being on the World Cup stage was so extreme that I like felt really out of place. And I was like, I don't know if I've ever said this in a public arena before, but I have come in last at a World Cup, like actual last place. And I think I struggled always to let go of feeling like that. Like, I think that was my first introduction to being at the World Cup. And I did not, like, not that I didn't deserve to be there, but I was not at the level that I should have been in order to be competing at an event like that. Like, I barely trained. I hadn't been comp climbing. I had barely been climbing at all. And so I think I struggled to not see myself like that. And so as I continued to get better and improve, I just always was like stuck in this mindset of feeling like I wasn't good enough and that I didn't belong. But yeah, I mean, that's like confidence issues like that is definitely something I've dealt with forever, like since I was a kid. My mom, this is a funny story. My mom has always told this story that I've always also had a really bad guilty conscience. Like I've never been able to get away with anything. She would always say like I would steal a piece of candy from the pantry and then walk up to her 5 seconds later and be like, I stole a piece of candy and like tell her I could never get away with anything. But when we moved to Canada when I was in third grade and I switched into French immersion and I had been taking school in English for my whole life. But I was way behind when I switched into French immersion because everybody's speaking French and I didn't know how to speak French as well. And so when I was in fourth grade, I was in a class and we had to do reading comprehension. And I cheated on this reading comprehension test in fourth grade. I copied off somebody else. And I felt so bad about it that I like couldn't sleep at night. Couldn't sleep. And then finally I like got up in the middle of the night and like told my mom that I had cheated on this test. And she was low-key like annoyed that I told her because she was like, now we have to freaking deal with it. So then told the school, like told her that I cheated. And it was this big thing. And they decided to have me redo the test. Like I had to do it by myself in the class. That was the resolution of that. And so I went into the class and redid the test. And I did way better when I did it by myself than when I cheated. Like it was like, I almost got a perfect score when I did it alone. And then when I cheated, I didn't do as well. Like I was cheating off somebody who was doing worse than I was. And I don't know, I feel like I don't remember that. My mom just told me that story, but yeah, I think I've always sort of felt like I need to look outward or be what somebody else is being or do what somebody else is doing instead of focusing on myself. And I mean, just circling back to hangboarding, like that has been really helpful for me, even mentally, to be like, I have something that is unique and special and like makes me have something that stands out from everybody else. Whether that has an impact on climbing or not, like I don't really care all that much, but to just have something that feels like it's individual to me and that it's mine and that it sets me apart has been really important to me in my progression, in just my confidence in myself and my belief that I can do something hard, whatever hard looks like to you or me or the next person. But yeah, I've sort of always been like that, I guess is what I'm saying.
I can see a total parallel for that story to competition climbing versus outdoor climbing. You know, outdoors, you get to do your own thing, try your own way, try hard on your own versus, you know, comparing yourself. And I don't blame you. Competition climbing can be brutal, and it's interesting to hear just kind of what it was like for you. And, you know, you have said in the past, you know, I've listened to other media and podcasts you've done, you've talked about this, what you kind of refer to as not being your strong suit, your mental fortitude in these situations. But it also sounds like it's something that you've continually worked on. Like, you know, clearly you identified that it's something that holds you back. And so it's maybe a lower hanging fruit thing for you to work on. And so I'm curious what you have tried that's helped and what you have tried that hasn't helped. And, you know, because I'm sure there's people who feel the same way and, you know, maybe you can help them at least get a few little tips and tricks for how they might tackle their own issues.
Yeah. Lately I've been climbing alone more, which I know isn't always possible for people but I've found that to be helpful. Just because I find a lot of times when I'm climbing with other people, like I don't let myself necessarily feel all the things I'm feeling, just because I'm trying to like hide it from other people or not trying to like bring the mood down or whatever. But, when I allow myself to like, you know, fall off a boulder and be like really sad about it for a second, I tend to get over it faster. Like I'm like, okay, I'm like fall off a boulder and have the thought of like, oh, I'm just never going to be able to do this boulder. And then I can, because I'm allowed to like feel that feeling, then I can after that be like, okay, that is not a helpful, that's like not a helpful thought to have had. And like, let's turn that the other way. And like, you know, you can do this boulder. Like that's not true. You don't like when I fall off a boulder and that I'm projecting and I think that like, oh, I'm never going to be able to do this. Like that's not true. Like when I really think about it, the truth is that I do think I can do this boulder and I'm mad that I'm not doing it. So I think it helps me like understand what the emotion is, because on the surface, I think it's one thing and that's not always true. Like I do often think I'm capable of it, and the frustration doesn't come from not being capable. The frustration comes from wanting that success so badly and not having it in that moment. So that's helped me like be more mindful. I've also worked with Hazel Finley a little bit, as just a mindset performance coach. So she helped me with some more tangible tactics in terms of how to be mindful. I am currently reading, I think Mastermind it's called, the Jerry Moffitt book about mental training, which is just fascinating to me, honestly, because I mean, he's just amazing and was amazing in his heyday of competitions, but just his mind, just reflecting on my own competition experience, it makes me realize even more like how lost I was in terms of the direction I was going in, the reason I was competing, how I like felt about myself. You know, he'll write like, you have to go into every competition, like knowing you can win and saying, I can win this and I'm the best and I deserve to be here. And I was like, I needed this book many years ago. Like I should have bought this book a long time ago. So just like reading about how other people approach life and approach climbing and consuming podcasts that have people that talk about it that you admire. Like I really liked this podcast with Keenan. I think he talked about having some similar feelings about climbing and approaches that I do, but he just approaches them all with so much more patience and confidence than I do. And so like, that's something I really look up to. So it's cool to hear different perspectives from different people. I subscribed to the Calm app for a while and listened to the collab they did with LeBron James. That was really helpful. That actually is what helped me when I did Show Your Scars, which was my first 14, was that LeBron James collab, just because he's another one that I look up to just from pure confidence. And, you know, he's an excellent athlete, but he also can acknowledge that he's good and go into a game feeling like he's good and he deserves to be there and he like is capable. And one of my favorite things that he talked about in that Calm thing, which I did not expect to go on a LeBron James tangent on this podcast, but here we are. He talks about just, you can have this moment where you're in a game and you're on the, you know, you're at the 3-point line and the ball gets inbounded and the clock's running down and you have one shot and you take the shot. And if you make it, your team wins and you have a whole horde of fans and a whole state and a whole community that are riding on you and you have to take the shot and you have to make it in order to win. And he just talks about like, sometimes you miss that shot, but other times you don't, and you're not going to know unless you take the shot. And so for me, that was like one of the really cool mantras that I kind of switched around in my head to be applicable to climbing, where it's like, you're not going to send the boulder every time, but you have to pull on every time expecting that you could, and that it's possible. And that all, the only thing that you can control is just taking the shot every time and continuing to show up. So that was like one of the cooler mindset switches that I've had for sure, was after listening to that little quip from him.
LeBron James telling us how to climb boulders.
I know. I wouldn't have expected it either, but here we are.
It's interesting that you brought up that style that he employs for, you know, dealing with stress, because I guess in my head, so I have competed and I actually really enjoy competing. And I think of myself as someone who rises to the occasion and maybe does better in competition. And so sometimes my line of questioning, like I asked Carlo about doing the Dark Side project and like, how do you make this try count? You know, conditions are perfect. And, you know, like right now you have to do it. You know, he had like a baby on the way, you know, like Carlo, like you got to do it now. And the way he put it was kind of like, no, like I can't really, it doesn't really work like that. It's like, you just keep showing up, you know, you show up and you do your best. And then you show up again, you do your best. And it was a big mind shift for me too, because I think that you can build up too much in this moment. And then like, if that's all it is about that one moment and it's not your whole life, then you're, you know, you are on your own ratcheting up the anxiety to the ultimate level for no real reason. So good job, LeBron. Good job, Carlo.
Yeah, no, I totally think that's, I heard one, I think it was a podcast, I don't know if it was this part or something different, but somebody somewhere said, you have to go to every boulder like it's the last time you'll ever be at this boulder. And like, you never know what could happen. Like there's a rock slide or like the boulder could, something could break, like whatever. And for some reason that for a long, that just got like stuck in my head that like, if I don't do it right now, the boulder's going to break or like, it's going to fall over or like, whatever. And that just for me was not, that does not work. Like I, it is weird because I you know, I've done relatively well in competitions once I was prepared. I do well under pressure. Like I always test like that kind of thing, but I am just miserable. Like that's for me is the trade-off. Like if there's pressure, I tend to do okay once there's pressure and I tend to rise to pressure, but I am like actively having a bad time and I'm not fun to be around. And so I think it's like how to create opportunities to succeed and how to make sure you're taking those opportunities to succeed, but that you're not feeling so obsessed with the idea that it's now or never, because usually that's not true, first of all. And I think that has also helped is like, really taking a step back and thinking about what is true. Like, I'm falling off this boulder and I'm so annoyed and out loud, I'm saying, I just can't do it. But when I really think about it, I know I can do it. Like that is the real emotion, is that I know I can do it and that I want to do it right now. But realistically, neither of those things matter at the end of the day. It's all just like Carlo says about showing up and doing your best and continuing to try. And then taking the small wins and the small moments of success with a greater emphasis than on what this big, huge deal is in your head. Because at the end of the day, like it's one boulder. And as soon as I'm done this one boulder, we're going to wrap up this package, put it to the side and move on to whatever's next. Like I always have this sense of like my life is going to change when I do this boulder, and like it's all going to be, everything's going to be better once I just grind my way through this one project. And then before you know it, you're back in it with the next boulder. So if you don't learn how to like be happy and be enjoying what you're doing for the sake of doing it, then I think you just end up miserable. And that's sort of why I quit competing, is like I just couldn't figure out how to find that joy that I used to have for competing. I'm always hesitant to say that I've like retired from competition, because I am inherently super competitive. And if I find a way, hopefully and potentially through climbing outside more and learning to be with myself and figure out how my brain works for me, then maybe I'll find my way back to it and make a little comeback. But yeah, losing that joy in competition, that was the thing that really pushed me out of that aspect of the sport.
That was really interesting. And AJ may have come back. So, you know, it's always possible.
Exactly. Exactly.
It might have been me that said something about going to the boulder, like it's your one time on it. And, you know, for me, coming from San Francisco and having boulders far away and having like a strong crew, it was, I think maybe maybe I put it wrong, where it's not about having a ton of pressure. It's like, hey, you're showing up and you want to go out there to do it. Like, I think there is a mentality, and maybe that's kind of like the Jerry Moffitt thing, where it's like, you don't show up to necessarily just kind of play around. Like, you're going to get the boulder done. Like, going to the boulder thinking that you're going to get done, although these aren't really projecting mentalities where it's like, this is going to take me 20 tries. It's just, we're going to go here. And sometimes you don't have a crew that is always going to go. And sometimes you get injured later. Sometimes you get old like me, and maybe you never will go back. And so maybe it's not the best style if you struggle with that pressure, but it's something that actually really did help me with this mentality of like, you want to actually do the boulder. And I think that's even a mentality that can stretch over projecting, where you want to have that confidence that in the end, though, like you're saying, you know, in the end, you're like, no, I can do this. You know, maybe today didn't go well, or maybe that try didn't go well, but still having that fire inside of you. And I love that you referenced Keenan, because it's funny hearing people like you and Keenan, where you guys talk about, my mental game isn't so good. I've only won like 3 national champions, and I climbed B14. Like, it's like, I hear you, but I like hearing that too, because it's, the struggle's real, you know, and hearing the internal dialogue. And that's why I asked, like, what have you done that's really helped? And just the fact that you identify it and then take steps to make it better is probably why you will end up succeeding over and over and over again.
Yeah. And I think the pressure I was talking to you about like, you know, climbing the boulder, like it's your only chance. I think that's more like from a tactical side. Like, I think I've found myself sitting under a boulder with like skin that's not fully healed, and like, I'm not really mentally in it. And like, I'm just there for the sake of being there. Obviously this is for a project that's close to home, when you have the luxury of going whenever. And so I think it's more that, like, I've tried to stop doing that as much as possible, and like waiting and being more patient for like a time when the weather's better, or when my skin is better, or X, Y, and Z, like going to a boulder less just for the sake of going there and like saying that I went, even though I know I feel bad and I know my skin is bad and I know I'm sore still from the last day. I mean, obviously if you're on a trip and you like have to go, you have to go. But I just don't, there are some people in this world that are phenomenal at like, I've split a tip and now I'm taping up and like, I'm so haggard and I'm going to do it anyway. And that has just never, I don't think that's ever been me. I've always had a really hard time when I don't feel like I'm ready. And just like pushing past all of those things. And I mean, obviously it depends on the boulder. Some boulders you can do with tape and some you can't, but yeah, that has not been my strong suit ever. I think I just tend to spiral at that point when I'm taped up and sore and things aren't going well. I don't really have that next level rally that some people do.
Well, you clearly have certain things that you just are, I mean, world class at. And something that occurred to me when you're talking about Jerry Moffitt's approach to competition, how it just didn't even sound like you exactly, no matter what. And it just made me wonder, I was like, should Allison adopt Jerry Moffitt's approach, or do you have to find like what part of that really resonates with you? Because it seems hard to just make that thing that sounds so foreign all of a sudden like your mantra, like I'm going to win no matter what. You know, that sounds not exactly like the lesson you would take from there. So maybe you just have to make it your own.
Yeah. And I do think that aspect of truth is something that really helped me. Just in terms of like, for example, my third nationals win, I went into that comp and my coach said, what's your goal for this competition? And I said, I just don't want to come in last, was my goal. And he was like, okay, let's say you come in second last. Like, are you good? That's good for you. You're going to be happy with that. Like, is that you're that's a lie. You're lying to yourself by saying that, like, my goal is to come in second last. Like, that's not true. You're like trying to set yourself up so that you aren't going to be disappointed, is what you're trying to do. That's not your goal. Like, you've already won this competition. Your goal is to win it. That's why you're going. So like, having conversations like that with people was also really helpful about like, what am I saying to myself? Because I'm trying to like pad myself for failure, And I'm honestly scared of succeeding and what that will mean for the next part of my life and what is true. Because like, I'm falling off this boulder that I know I can do and saying, I just can't do it. That sentence is not true. I know I can do it and I'm frustrated that I'm not doing it. I know I've said that a bunch of times, but then it's the same thing for competition. Like, I'm going into this competition saying I don't want to come in last, but that's also not true. Like, I'm not showing up to this competition to just be there and to come in second last. Like, I have won this before. I know that I'm capable of winning it. And so that's the goal. Yeah. So for me, it's been really helpful to start thinking about what aspects of, yeah, that Jerry Moffat attitude. I probably will never be at that point where I can just say that in all scenarios and be totally truthful with myself and really feel that way. But I think I can be better. And I'm not also saying this from a place of like, figured out, like I just fell off a boulder that I'm working on the other day and said, I just can't do it. And then had to reflect on if that was true or not. But I think that's something that I need to work on and that I am trying to focus on more is like trying to identify what the honest emotions are and what I honestly want, I guess, out of climbing and out of myself. Because usually the things that I'm saying that are negative are not always correct or honest.
It sounds like if you're in a crowd of screaming people and on the clock, you don't get to hear that voice. It sounds like, you know, it's easier for you to be truthful and honest when you're by yourself, and then you can process it and give the answer versus that pressure.
I mean, I will say, like, there is something that is completely magical and intangible about like topping a boulder in a final that nobody's done and you're the last one out and it hasn't been done yet and you stick the zone and nobody's gotten there yet and the crowd is yelling and you're going for the top hold and then you top it and win the cup. Like, there is absolutely nothing even remotely close to like that, I think, in life in general. And climbing outside is great, and it is a different kind of satisfaction and process of like projecting something that you've been working on for a long time and finally topping it out. It's a different kind of feeling of accomplishment and of, self-satisfaction. But I will say that feeling in a crowd, in a comp, those few fleeting moments that you get over a lifetime it's untouchable by anything else. I've never had any experience that is anything like that, for sure.
Thanks for taking us there for a moment. I kind of felt like I was doing it too. Well, maybe after another decade plus of climbing outdoors at your limit, maybe you'll get some kind of rush that is similar in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, I also think it's not that the comp moments are better than the outdoor ones, because I think, they're equally as amazing and also fleeting too. Like, most of climbing is not topping things out that you've been working on for months on end. But just very, very different, I think. And both equally as amazing and as inspiring to me. So different.
Okay, Allison, I have beta for you. If you ever find yourself in ISO and you want to imagine what Jerry would do, or maybe I feel like this is like an Arnold Schwarzenegger move. Okay, you see all these people, you know that they're really good and strong, and you're watching them warm up, and then you should go to the hold, the crux hold on the problem they're warming up on, and you should dead hang it and kind of drink some coffee, make your Rubik's Cube, and just go, this is a great hold. And that's the power move. Oh, am I in your way? Oh, excuse me.
I didn't realize. All right. Noted. If I make a comeback ever, which we'll see, but if I did that, I got it. I'll note it for next time.
Okay. Well, with all that outdoor climbing you're doing, you're generating a ton of media, and now you have an outlet. You have Float Climbing on YouTube, and you made it, you created it. And, what is Float Climbing, and why do you hate Mellow?
See, that's funny.
It's a joke. Well, you just didn't laugh, though. It's okay.
Anytime, it's just so mind-boggling to me that anytime anybody talks about trying to create a space or a platform for a group of people that like doesn't maybe have one like that. Like, I feel like it's the same thing with racism and homophobia and every aspect of people trying to have any sort of progress in life. There's always this notion that if you're for something, you're against the opposite, like, which is super frustrating to me. Cause I feel like anytime I talk about women in climbing, cause that's what I know and what I think is important and what I hope to make an impact on for the future generation, it's always like, well, what about the men? Or like, what about, so like I started Float, which is this YouTube channel that I'm really excited about. That's hopefully going to promote more hard sends and cool stories from mostly women in the climbing community. And yeah, there was just immediately this like attitude that I must hate Mellow. Like that was the, like, if you're going to have a YouTube channel for women, like it's because you don't like Mellow at all. And I just feel like that's a classic attitude of like, you're trying to make space for somebody who hasn't had that platform yet. And then automatically that means you're like against the other thing. But yeah, it's just not true. I honestly, I think what Mellow does is so cool and I'm definitely very inspired by it. But I also just realized that there was a lot of stories about women that I was hearing both from my friends and otherwise that just weren't getting the platform or the attention that I thought they deserved. And so, yeah, I thought, why not make that space myself? So, it's still a little baby YouTube channel, but, I think it's pretty cool. I think every time I click on it and just seeing, you know, however many videos are already on there, just of all women climbing hard stuff, yeah, I think it's something I'm definitely proud of. Like, I think it's a cool space to have created. And yeah, I mean, there's just more women doing cool stuff than ever before in climbing. So hopefully I can be a part of sharing more of that for sure.
Yeah, you're doing it. I mean, this is my biggest thing always is people critique, and it's easy to critique. It's hard to make something. And I got to tell you, the trailer for Float is so good. I just, anyone who's, you know, just, I feel like that's the first, of course, it's the trailer. So it's the first thing you should click on, but go click on that. You will be instantly pulled in. And then you told me you were the one who edited it. And so not only are you an amazing climber and every, like the really, really cool media you put out there. And so
iMovie.
iMovie. Yeah. The secret tool of everyone, the one that comes automatically on everyone's computer.
iMovie.
Well, so, you know, some of the videos do have a style. The fact you even made a YouTube channel, it makes me wonder just when you were young and growing up, what were you inspired by? Like, how, you know, what got you so excited to both climb and now create content? And, you know, cause it bridges the next generation. Like, who are you hoping to inspire with it as well?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, growing up, I didn't really watch that much climbing media. I think a lot of the things that I saw and paid attention to were just from my parents mostly. And neither of them were climbers and didn't really know much about climbing. But I grew up in Canmore, Alberta, right in the heart of the Rockies, in this little climbing gym called The Vision, spelled wrong, V-S-I-O-N is how it was spelled. It was just like a crazy community of people that were really strong. And I didn't know necessarily at the time, but like from just all different genres of climbing, like Will Gadd trained there the whole time I was growing up, like legendary ice climber, mixed climber. And then as I grew up and got older, Sonny Trotter moved to Canmore and he was climbing in the gym all the time and he dabbled in coaching the youth team. And so those are just some examples of like these like really strong legendary climbers that were climbing there. And the team at the time was like 8 people or something. So there wasn't that many of us. And so I just was surrounded by whoever was in my vicinity. And honestly, it was a kind of a nice way to grow up climbing, is like surrounded by these legends of the sport and not really know. I didn't really have any sense of what was happening until I left Canmore. And then I was like, oh yeah, well, those guys are pretty cool. but yeah, I mean, that was just sort of the vibe of the gym though. It was like, nobody really came across in any certain way that they were better than anybody else, and everybody was just there to climb, and the gym was like just plywood that had been straight painted with blue and orange paint, and like just a giant spray wall. Basically, there was like all the classic old school taped roots. Yeah, I mean, it was a great gym to grow up in, and it was like leave your ego at the door for sure, because there's always somebody in there that's gonna put you in your place.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that Sonny Trotter guy. He's done some crack climbing. He's done some climbing.
He's done some stuff.
By the way, I think Will Get has some of the best pictures of him climb. Like, I never wanted to mix climb until I saw pictures of what he's doing, and it's just gorgeous. I'm really always inspired by aesthetics, and you know, I never thought of myself as being someone who would want to climb ice, because that sounds like you would die. But seeing the caves, and it's just gorgeous up there. Anyways, total tangent.
And I mean, I think one thing that's really cool is like, it's sort of what you just said about, you know, people really like to complain these days about how things are changing in climbing and what needs to be different and what's lacking that we had in the last generation. But at the same time, like, I mean, I think obviously mentorship is something that we talk about a lot. It's something that is being lost, just partially because there's so many new people climbing. Like, it's, you know, back then you could have an almost 1-to-1 ratio of like mentor to person, because there just wasn't that many people in the sport. But I also think we've like lost this sense of like kindness and patience that I used to really value when I was growing up, of like, you know, I'm a 12-year-old girl trying these boulders, and there's a guy in the gym who's 45 working on the same boulder as me. And I don't remember a time when they were like dismissive of me because I was a team kid, or like didn't want to climb with me, or didn't want to share beta, or like was annoyed because I wasn't chalking up and I was like sweating on all the holds. There was just a lot of, yeah, kindness and patience for people that didn't know as much and didn't have as much experience. And so instead of like turning your nose up at them or walking away or being mad or like rolling your eyes or something passive aggressive, like you had the kindness and the patience to like take a minute and look at this kid and be like, okay, maybe like, can I give you some tactical advice? Like, maybe rest a little longer and chalk up before you get on, and then you'll do it for sure. And having a moment of encouragement and of wisdom instead of sort of just complaining about it. Cause I feel like there's just more complaining these days and less action to try to educate people and to try to do better and create a community that is better for everybody.
And what makes climbing so special is that you can, you know, climb with someone who is 30 years your senior, and you know, like that relationship, it would never happen in surfing or something. I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I have no idea. Actually, I don't want to say anything. Maybe it wouldn't happen in football. How about that? And I mean, when I think back to being a little kid, people did mentor me. I actually say that, yeah, that ratio, people wanted to mentor me. They were like, whoa, like there's a kid who wants to climb. They want to do what we're doing. This stuff is crazy. Are you sure you want to do this? And then they really were kind and generous. And I think it's something that's cool about climbing is that, you know, I do meet kids in the gym sometimes, and I, you know, giving someone beta appropriately in the sense that you're not just spraying, but helping out a kid. I just literally did this like 2 days ago. This kid was on the kilter board. He couldn't do a move. And I just kind of showed him how to twist his body, and he did it easily the next try. And there was so much joy there. And you know, I love what you're saying. I think it's a lost art. I'm not sure that it's can be easily solved. I'm not sure if it's really even as big a problem as I sometimes make it out to be, because maybe it's just kind of part of the growth of sports. But just that vibe you're talking about is something that makes our community really special, and I want more of it.
Yeah, I think so too. And I, you know, I think we're all guilty of like getting so tunnel vision on whatever project you're working on that it seems really like invasive for somebody to be coming in and like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example. Like, you know, a ex-team kid who hasn't really climbed outside that much is like just getting into it and is like walking around in the dirt in their climbing shoes and then trying the boulder and like making the footholds all dirty or something. And like, I mean, I feel the instinct to just be annoyed and like walk away or roll your eye or like whatever that is. And so it's been important to me to like remember back to those moments, like even beyond just giving beta, of just like, okay, this kid like doesn't know, like genuinely doesn't know that this is one, affecting the boulder and like the climbability of it for other people, but just baby doesn't know that that's like a bad tactic. Like that is something you have to learn, that like you can't walk around in the dirt in your climbing shoes because it will make the friction worse. So instead of like treating that with annoyance or like complaining about it, I can take the moment to be like, hey, I have this slider pad attached to my crash pad for wiping off your shoes. Like that's a great way to make sure your feet stay on the wall. Or to be able to give that advice, like in just small moments like that, or small, small pieces of learning that I have had in my, like I've had a great luxury of having people to look up to, like Will, like Sunny, like all these people that I grew up climbing with in the gym. But I don't remember a time when they ever were like, hello child, I'm going to climb with you and be your mentor for 2 hours. And we're going to sit at the gym and climb together. But it was just like the accumulation of these moments of like noticing that Will is coming into the gym every day and training and training and training, like noticing that somebody is wiping their shoes off before they're pulling on the rock every single time. And just, yeah, I think it's more of a culmination of small moments and small instances of patience like that towards people that just don't know and are climbing outside for the first time. And yeah, I think we should all be happy that more people are getting into it and that more people are able to enjoy the sport that we all care so much about and sort of revolve our whole lives around.
Yeah, I like that idea of paying it forward. By the way, definitely wipe your shoes off before getting on the
climb. That was the best example I could think of.
I was like, you got me. Well, because like, oh, it's not just to keep your feet on it, you know, it wears away, you know, it wears away the footholds, or it makes, you know, it's, yeah. Yeah. You definitely triggered me. I was like, get off there, kid.
Don't do that. You can pull them off by their shirt first. You just pull them off the wall and then tell them wisdom.
You know what the thing is though, is just when we were thinking about kids and stuff like that, is I was thinking, oh, I hate when kids run under me and I like will fall on them. But you know who I really blame is I blame parents, right? And so what that made me think though, is that when you see something going wrong, it's not the kid. It's that the learning hasn't been put into the kid. And so, you know, in some of these more nuanced things, you know, not the basic physics, that the parents should be able to say like, hey, don't go under this full grown person, you're going to get hurt. But who the heck knows not to, or who the heck knows to wipe off their shoes? And it's like Sonny Trotter knows, you know, and he can tell you. And so that's our, you know, being stewards of the sport. And that's why I appreciate you doing stuff like making a YouTube channel. I mean, you put out great media on Instagram and everything, but you know, you're setting an example and setting a standard that even if it's not explicit, it will inspire and just morph the generation that grows up watching you and it. And so just thank you for doing that, Allison.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely the goal. I think, you know, I have a lot of climbing goals for myself too. And I hope to, you know, I hope to put out media about that as well, because that's also something that obviously is really important to me. But definitely I have been given a platform that I didn't necessarily expect to be given in my life. So I want to make sure that that has an impact, or at least that I try to make an impact on the people around me in a way that's positive and productive. And yeah, it feels like for sure it's paying it forward, because I do feel very lucky to live my life the way I'm living it right now. So yeah, I want that to make an impact on people for sure.
All right. Well, that's good. That's a good one to start wrapping up on. I love it. I got to ask you if you prepared a pro tip for us today, Allison.
I think my best pro tip, which I feel like sort of weaves into everything we've talked about so far, is just to set small goals within your big dreams. I think that makes life and climbing and goals, and big goals, I should say, way less scary to have things that are bite-sized and maybe like different than climbing too, like hanging a 20 mil edge or bicep curling, however much you want to do. And having things that are more manageable and more tangible than something that is based around grades or on a specific boulder. Because it's really great to have big dreams and big goals, but I've found it really useful for me to have little more manageable bite-sized goals within those big dreams as well.
That's great. That's really practical. I gotta remember that too. Okay, everyone, check out Float Climbing. And Allison, did you prepare a PDF with your sets and reps that tell all your secrets for hangboarding so that we too can do a 100-pound Beastmaker edge and it's only $9.99? And do you take Venmo?
I did not, but yeah. DM me and I'll figure it out. I'll send it to you.
No, that was just a deadpan joke that I feel like that's always what people are looking for. But if you did have that, you would please take my money.
That I will take all of your money. No, I will say another just, I mean, it's maybe more of a pro tip, I guess, but I feel like the other key is to just not get so caught up in all of the things that are being shared on social media in terms of like coaching and training plans and stuff. I feel like everybody's on the hunt for like what the best thing is and what's going to make you the strongest, the fastest. And I feel like my advice there would be to just commit to something and see if it works and like stop thinking about if it's the best. Like if it's a training plan created by somebody who is knowledgeable and has, you know, a good resume to back them up, like it'll probably work, but you just have to give it the time to work. And yeah, I think a lot of times people get really caught up in is like, is this the person that's going to change my life? Whereas for me, it's really been more about dedicating the time and the energy into being consistent about something, whatever that something is.
Okay. Take my money and give them the PDF. Okay.
Roger that.
I think you could do a nice little business there. Now you gave, I really appreciated the absolute geeking out on hangboarding, and I hope that was helpful. Like that approach of not just like sets and reps, but just what it really is like to climb with stronger fingers, what it does, what it doesn't do. Like, you know, and I found it, you really helped me, and I wish I had dagger fingers, and maybe I'm going to get some kind of surgery. And I want to go and get like ultrasound. I want to go see Tyler Nelson, get like a more fall. I want him to tell me, give me an excuse. That's what I want.
Actually, I have now that we have a platform of people that like training, I have heard a theory. I think I was talking to Will Anglin about it, but he and I both would like somebody to try to tattoo the tips of their fingers, because when you tattoo something, you don't sweat. Like it doesn't, you don't have the same. So I actually think that if you like blacked out your tips, they would be less sweaty. And so if somebody could try that and report back, I'm reaching out to all listeners. If you blacked out your fingertips, did it make them less sweaty?
I will bring you on the pod. I will not be the one who does it, but I will bring you on the pod. That's crazy. I got asked just because you brought it up. You have a really cool little tattoo on your wrist there. Can you describe it and why you have it?
Yeah, I have a little circle on my wrist. And I somewhere along the line, Kyra Condi and I got friendship bracelets that had a circle on the back. And then eventually they like eroded and fell off. And so we decided to get them permanently tattooed. So Kyra has one, has a circle in the same place on the same wrist. And then we started a podcast and called it Circle Up because of the circles on our wrist. And we thought we were clever. So there it is.
Oh, what a great plug at the end. I love it. That was perfect. Okay. Allison, thank you so much. That was just a pleasure. And I really appreciate all you're doing in the community. And just thanks again.
Thanks. See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to learn more about Test Piece Climbing, you can check us out at testpiececlimbing.com and even book a session with one of our coaches.